I'm Frances Cook. Welcome to Making Sense, supported by KiwiBank. Sometimes a difficult experience early in life will shape you, for better or worse. For Angela, it was an early experience of finding herself as a child with her family in Women's Refuge that made her determine she would create financial stability for herself and any future family that she had. So as a young adult, she looked for highly paid jobs and funneled that into property investments. But after hitting financial independence at 33, she found she didn't want to stop. So now she's on the cusp of buying a business too. Why not stop and kick back a bit? Well, because she wants to help other kids who might be in a similar situation to what she once was. I'm joined now by property investor and business owner Angela Strang. Now, you're someone who has been investing in property for a long time, but now you're looking to make a bit of a switch. You are looking to get into the business world. This is so interesting, a really interesting switch from you, but let's go right back to the beginning first. When did you first become interested in money and start investigating some options that could help you build up a bit more financial independence?
Sure. I think it was more a awareness of a lack of money growing up. We went to Women's Refuge. It was the second house I ever lived in. We were homeless for a while. And then just that general growing up with seeing my mum having to stress over money, not ever having enough money, even though she was trying to work part-time jobs with the solo parents benefit to make ends meet. I do remember one specific night where I saw my mum crying over her budget book. Again, I was meant to be in bed, but I just snuck out and was interested in why, you know, what was she crying about? And it was the budget book again. And I just remember this one night specifically going back to my room and saying, I will never, ever be in that situation again. So I feel like that is the pivotal moment where I was aware that I needed to change something if I didn't want to be stressed out with money when I was a parent. And I guess that's where the motivation came from. I've had this huge drive to set myself up financially so that when I had children, I didn't have to stress and worry. It's come to fruition, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. What a turnaround in circumstances. Do you remember what age you were when that happened?
Not specifically, but I think it was somewhere between maybe 7 to 9-ish.
That's young. What was it like for your family? Because obviously so many of our early experiences do shape us, and especially shape us with money. Did it make it difficult for you to then approach money in a healthy way, or was it something that just lit such a fire under you that you were really determined to make the most of it?
It was definitely a huge fire of the biggest driving force I've had, I guess, to set myself up. One thing I do notice that I probably need to be aware of with my children is I do love the freedom of being able to go out and just buy them brand new clothes instead of secondhand clothes. I do love secondhand shopping still as well, but I love the fact that I don't have to think about it. And I need to be more conscious probably around my children, especially as they grow up, to say, actually, we're not buying this because we need to budget it. You know, I need to sort of rein in my frivolous spending now to teach a good example to my children.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard that, isn't it? When you have things that you didn't have growing up, there can be that sort of push to almost live vicariously and also to just enjoy it yourself. It's nice doing nice things for other people. It's really hard finding that line where you're not spoiling them or creating an unhealthy attitude to money in a different way. I certainly now, it's something that I'm constantly watching for myself and worrying about. It's hard, eh?
Yeah. And even just the holidays, I think I need to sort of think, you know, we're going on holiday today, you know, for example, overseas. And I think I need to somehow say this isn't normal, but yeah, it's a help. I mean, they're young yet, but I've got some time to think about how I'm going to strategically do that.
It's funny because I often talk to people about money and finances, obviously. And one of the things people often ask about is motivation. And I think it often comes down to different things for different people. But for me, money is very much
something that I associate with independence and freedom and not being able to be told what to do. Is it similar for you? I'm picking up on similar themes.
Yeah, to be honest, I do love the fact that I can just go and buy what I want when I want. I also, I think for me, I have an amazing husband, and this is definitely not on the cards, but growing up, seeing my mum in a situation where she had to leave a situation all of a sudden and you don't have the money, I wanted to be in that situation where if that ever happened to me, I could just leave and I could be fine. My children would be fine. I wouldn't need to work for anything, and it wouldn't be so stressful. So I think that not being controlled by money, yeah, is definitely a nice thing. Although I don't need to worry about that personally. It's worked out great. But it's nice to know, I guess, that you won't ever be in that situation.
I feel like having that safety net also sometimes stops you needing it as much, because it also makes it easier to find healthy situations. It's like that thing about, you know, when people are job hunting, it's so much easier to play hardball and hold out for a really good job and a really high salary, sometimes from the exact same boss. But you can negotiate more when you're feeling more secure and you're not worried about getting the rug pulled from under you because you've got your own back. I don't know. What do you think? I feel as though when you do have that financial security, it's easier to seek out situations where you don't need it as much.
Absolutely. And I think that also goes for the business sense. Like taking on this business that I'm currently got under contract at the moment, there's no way I would have taken that on if I was still had $50,000 to my name. Or yeah, physically, I couldn't probably, or you could vendor financing, but I wouldn't be willing to take that risk. I think the more that you earn, the more that you have to your name, the easier it is to think when you don't have as much risk. You know, you could lose a lot and still be okay. So I do feel for people that are starting off, it's definitely hardest at the start. And as you grow, it keeps on snowballing and you just becomes easier and easier as time goes on.
So from being in women's refuge with your family at a very young age to then you hit financial freedom at 33, which is really young. So what was that goal for you and what does financial freedom mean to you?
Yeah, so when I was 30, I remember having enough to, I think it was only 30 something thousand. I had enough passive income to be able to quit my job if I wanted to, but it would have been stressful if a house needed a new roof, for example. I might have struggled to get financing. I mean, I had enough there on my revolving credit on my personal house to pay for a new roof, but it would have stressed me out. So I wasn't ready to quit work then. It was later on, after doing more renovations and building up more property portfolio, at 33, that I had enough there. I felt actually quite comfortable that I could quit work now and never have to work again for the rest of my life. I think to get to that point, I didn't know how I was going to do that when I was a kid. I just wanted to be rich. So I basically just worked any kind of job that was high paying and huge hours. So tractor driving in the UK, mining for 6.5 years in Western Australia. So when I was overseas working in those jobs, I didn't live anywhere. So I saved a lot of money on living costs. So it was kind of a twofold thing. And then I started investing in property, and I guess I was on good money. If I had have just saved and put that money in the bank, I would not have become financially free. It was definitely through the investing that allowed me to become financially free. You know, you got the equity gain of the property, but also the cash flow from the property. And I remember being in Australia thinking, right, when can I move home? When will I have enough money to not ever work again in my life? Because that was sort of the goal. And I had 4 properties at the time. And I thought, well, all I need to do is double that and I'll have enough. So I moved home and worked towards that, buying another 4 properties to build that cash flow up. And that's sort of where I got. Yeah, 33 was when I got to that point.
When you do those jobs that are A, high paid, but B, also, you know, if you get accommodation with it or you're able to live really cheaply or whatever, your 20s can be an incredibly powerful time for stacking some cash and making gains early and creating the resources that can then let you take your foot off the gas later, right?
Absolutely. And it's fun, right? Like you're in your 20s, you don't care if you don't have anywhere to live. It's fun. You just go to Asia on your break, or you go check out another place in Australia, which I did. It was a really fun time. I wasn't living super frugally, but it's just that I had enough money from working 4 weeks at a time to spend on, you never spend all that on your 1 week off. Yeah, it was a great time as well.
I've got to say, I mean, I know you say you can't spend all that. I have known some people who do.
Yes. And there are those men who go to Asia and spend it on, you know what? Yeah. They spend it quite easily.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that there are whole industries set up to relieve you of that cash. And it's funny, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people look at those jobs and see the dollars, which is great, absolutely. But from anyone I've talked to who's actually done it, they're highly paid for a reason. They are quite hard, and you are required to sort of live the job for a while. So I would still say you're earning that money. And you see some people do that in their 20s and then have an awesome time and then nothing to show for it, really. Whereas it's, yes, you want to kick back and have some fun. Yes, you want to make sure you're enjoying your life and having that balance. But if you can stack that cash, you're going to have a lot more fun later on as well, right? So where did you feel that trigger of, okay, I think I'm going to stack this in property? You know, what drew you that direction?
So the first property was just because I had been saving up some money. I thought, right, I need to do something with this now. And so I thought, well, I'll buy a house in New Zealand so that when I move back, I was always pretty sure that I wanted to move back at some stage. And I just thought, well, then it gives me a base that I've got a house, really, for me to move back to. I guess I became an accidental landlord. And from there, I saw, oh, this is making good money. This works quite well. Let's rinse and repeat this. So kept on going after that.
Did you ever go to things like, you know, there's a huge industry around things like property seminars and talks and things like that. Did you do any of that stuff or get books? Like, how did you learn this industry? Because there can be fish hooks in property.
Definitely. And there was fish hooks. I just learned them along the way. Unfortunately, I would say to anyone now, definitely read books. Definitely talk to other people who are investing. Don't do what I did. I'm not a good example. I had all the bad things happen to me. But it was, I just went in the deep end and learned that way. I think the only book I ever read was Tim Ferriss, The 4-Hour Work Week. And that is an amazing book. I remember reading that as I was traveling through Asia backpacking, and I absolutely loved it. And I thought, right, that's me. That's the life I want. And that probably helped spur me on to set myself up well. But as far as property investment books, no, I didn't. I would definitely say do that if you'd like to invest in property. It's a lot harder too now than when I started as well with all the rules.
Yeah, it has. It has changed quite a bit. So obviously, whenever we have these chats, they are by nature looking backwards a little bit. That's just kind of how it is. It's impossible to talk to someone who says, I'm going to become a millionaire by doing this. Well, lots of people say that. Let's talk in a few years. So when you were doing this and now looking back, what do you see as, what was the most powerful tactic that helped you succeed in this? And is there anything you did that you're like, definitely don't do that? Like, what were the good bits and what were the bad bits along your journey?
The key lessons I learned was property management. It's selecting the right tenants at the start. So I just, yeah, I can do that. I also let the first tenant of mine manage the property for me when he moved out. That was a wrong move. Of course, I've never had that experience. They felt sorry for this couple and they completely trashed my house. Yeah, so I think getting the right tenants for a start, even if you just get a property manager to find the tenants for you and then you want to manage it, yeah, don't do that yourself for a start. There's a lot to learn, and I think you can learn a lot by watching the property manager for their first couple of years and then take over management later if you want to. Landlord protection insurance, I didn't have that on my first property. That would have really helped. And the other thing was, well, that was more of a business thing, but trusting your gut. I didn't trust my gut on a big project and lost a lot of money with that too. And getting a prenup signed, because the first ever property I did have was with my boyfriend at the time. And I got a prenup drawn up with my lawyer, but we both never signed it. So I lost 30 grand on that property too. So,
oh no, you were so close.
That's okay. Got that back to involve, it's fine.
Yeah. Good. I'm intrigued when you say about there was a situation where you didn't trust your gut and you regretted it, because I've got to say every situation that I've ever, I'm not a big believer in regrets, but the few situations that I do have regrets about, I definitely had an inkling beforehand and I didn't trust my gut and it bit me. And maybe that's part of why I have regrets, but it's every single time I've had that gut feeling and ignored it. So I'd love to know more about that situation. How much are you comfortable sharing?
Yeah, sure. A new milk plant was getting built in Goa, and me, I just take every opportunity I see. And I thought, right, I need to find out who these guys are. I'll buy some more properties. I'll rent them houses. I'll furnish them. Because when I worked on mining projects in Western Australia, I knew that they pay good money for having everything set up. So I'd organise the cleaners, the gardeners, everything. And that just ballooned into, I had like a Mr. Rental sort of business in Goa renting up. I think I had 16 house lots of furniture rented out. Ended up doing commercial cleaning at the milk plant, property management. Like there was just a whole heap of, I was just too busy. One of the companies I was working for then said, well, why don't you tender for the final clean down of the actual milk plant? Like not the hygienic areas, but all the offices and everything. When the milk plant was getting towards the end of its build life. And I did that, but I remember being awake so much at night thinking, how the heck, I am so busy with all these other strings of the business going on. How am I even going to get all this done? Like it's really, it's high risk work. It needs lots of health and safety regulations around it. I was just fretting about how I'm going to do that, because by then I'd moved down towards Invercargill. I was further away from Goa. But I thought, oh, well, I'll just put it in and see if I get it anyway. And so I did. I got awarded the contract. Anyway, I managed to do the work. I got it done. But then I was overseas for a month just on a holiday, and found out that it was Ebert Construction that I was contracted to. They went bust. So the big, massive bill that I, the invoice, it was just unfortunate timing, the invoice that I was due to get paid that month on my holiday, never came through. So I lost, I think it was $23,000, just like that.
And when you were working so hard for it, that would really sting.
Yeah. Well, when I could, I was a lot of stress. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And you'd had that inkling beforehand of, I'm not sure about getting into this.
Yeah, it was just too much. The workload was too much. And it was outside of my comfort zone. It was sort of outside of the box.
That is a hard thing, right? When you're laying the groundwork, and I mean, obviously we have already talked in this conversation about, you know, your 20s can be an amazing time to put in all this groundwork, really chase some high paying jobs and stack it into places that start earning more for you. And while I still agree with that, there's also that moment of you can spread yourself too thin and take on things that maybe aren't as rewarding as if you directed your energy elsewhere, right? Like you've only got a certain amount of hours in the day. You've only got a certain amount of energy. And there is that value in picking and choosing the projects to get the highest return. Same as investing. And so how was that a bit of a trigger point for you to start being a bit more choosy in terms of what you were doing and how you were directing your energy?
Oh, yes, definitely. I was still working up until very recently before that project, and I had started these four avenues. I was doing home staging, commercial cleaning, furniture hire, property management, and working full time. And all of those four avenues just grew. And then I just got too busy that I had to just make the decision to quit my job. I knew that obviously I was financially free, so I would have been fine financially if the business hadn't worked out or those businesses hadn't worked out. But I was so scared of failing. I was so scared of people thinking, oh, she's quit her job and then her business failed. What's she going to do now? But they didn't fail. They all were too busy that I had to then choose. So then I the milk plant things wound down anyway, the commercial cleaning and the furniture hire. So then I had property management and home staging. So then I had to decide, what am I going to do? And so at that point, it came down to, well, what do I actually really enjoy doing? I didn't enjoy the fact of being on call 24/7 as a property manager. And being the intermediary, I really love managing the properties myself, the ones that I own. But when you're not able to just make a decision when a tenant calls and wants something done, I found that quite frustrating. So I went down the home staging route and focused on that business. And that's it became a lot more enjoyable once I really focused on that one thing.
I want to pick up on something else you said there about the thought of what other people might say, because I think it is hard when you're doing something different. I mean, obviously you're doing it because you see a reward at the end of it and you're reaching for that. You've got a big goal in mind. You're pushing. But I don't even know whether or not people are always watching. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. Sometimes it feels like people are very, very ready to criticize. Sometimes it's actually just all in our heads because it's almost this externalization of our own fears. So how did you deal with that feeling of, I'm going to make a big leap and it's not necessarily what everyone else is doing and I do feel a bit exposed, but you know, how did you balance it to push yourself forwards to it?
Yeah, I guess you just use that as motivation. It really does drive you to make sure you do succeed. There is, you know, I guess we do have that bad tall poppy syndrome here in New Zealand. And it used to frustrate me when I was starting out in business. You know, people that are still in their jobs would be like, you knew that they wanted to know about your business, but they wouldn't want to know at the same time. It's like, why aren't they, you know, like I would ask people, you know, say, most people are great, but there's a couple of people that were like, they would never ask you how your business is going, but I would always ask them, how's your job going? Or how's this? Or how's that? But it used to really bug me. But over time, I learned that actually it's not that they're not happy for me. It's just that they are frustrated in their situation that they haven't, it's actually something that they would have actually liked to do, but they don't, not motivation, but what's the word? They just aren't willing to take that risk themselves. And so it's, I guess, a bit of jealousy that they would actually like to do it themselves. And having known that now, I feel it's so much easier to deal with it. Like I actually feel sorry for those people. And I kind of almost make it my little mission to help encourage them to do what they want to do. Because you can tell that under the surface, they actually want to do that too.
Yeah. Now, in 2015, you were named New Zealand Landlord of the Year. Congratulations. What do you think makes a good landlord?
I think being empathetic, putting yourself in their shoes. I witnessed a lot with the property management of most owners are great, but there was a couple of people who, especially if they'd lived in the house and then rented it out, they thought, well, it's still my home. I can do what I want, you know. But this is not your home. This is your investment, but it's the tenant's home. And you've got to put yourself in their shoes. That feeling of not knowing whether the landlord wants to sell up at any time or they need to move back into your house at any time must be terrifying. And I think it's always really good to reassure your tenants when you do inspections what your plans are, like to tell them that you do not have any plans to sell. You know, I think even just asking my tenants, oh, are you really enjoying living here? Do you see yourself living here for a long time? And then when they say, oh, yes, then you say, great, that's awesome. I'd love you to live here for a long time. Just reassuring them, I think, is really important. And getting on to maintenance issues ASAP is another thing as well. I think it really frustrates some tenants that have moved into some of my properties that go, oh, you get these things fixed really fast. I had to wait ages for that to happen. Why, you know, like if you're providing a service, if you went to a restaurant and had to wait 2 days to get served, I'm pretty sure you wouldn't be happy either. So, I think it's just treating it as a business, not treating it as your own home is the main thing.
I've heard that before, that can be one of the classic mistakes, particularly as one of the investing strategies that you see recommended is, you know, if you buy your first home and it's small and it's just what you can afford and then you pay it off a bit and you use that home as then leveraging yourself to you get a bigger house and you rent out that smaller home. All well and good, right, in terms of numbers. But in terms of the attitude it can create, a lot of people are then very emotionally attached to that house. I just don't think it's fair to expect, obviously nobody should be trashing the house. Totally. But I don't think it's fair to expect tenants to see this house the same way you did when you bought it and you lived there. It is different. And so I've been told that this can be a way that really so many landlords fall into this and they find it very hard to detach and treat it professionally as a landlord? I mean, for that situation, do you think it's better to sell that house or just get it like a classic investment to sort of create that emotional distance? Or do you think you can put in your own sort of mental barriers to stop you from feeling too emotionally invested? You know, what sort of tactics help you create that good professional landlord distance so that everyone's getting a good business arrangement from it?
I think it's more treating the house as an investment, looking at the numbers only, not getting yourself emotionally tied to the property. When you're looking at renovating, don't look at, oh, I really like these curtains, I'll put them in. Think, what would the general population like for curtains? What would the general Joe Blogs like in this house? What colours, what carpets? What's going to be the best, hardest wearing carpets? You know, not going on what you want because it's not your home. It's your investment and you need to make sure that it's going to provide the best return for you, because if it doesn't, you're not going to do the tenants any favour either, because you're going to end up selling up and throwing the towel in, and then they're going to have to move potentially. So just keep that emotional distance. If you find that hard, then I would definitely say get a property manager so that you have somebody acting intermediately for you. Although that's going to be quite frustrating for the property manager if you're still emotionally attached to the poor property manager.
You may not be their favourite landlord. I think your other point there in terms of what makes a good landlord is understanding things from the tenant's point of view in terms of the security, right? Because I do think we have systems in New Zealand that can create that larger feeling, that larger trend of insecurity in the rental accommodation. I think that doesn't work out well for anyone. I think that can encourage people to not treat the house well. And I think it also isn't nice for the tenant either. Nobody likes living in a precarious living situation. Your home is one of the very core things in your quality of life. So I love what you're saying there about having the conversations, trying to reassure people and encouraging that mindset of, I'm in this for the long haul. You are welcome to be in it for the long haul too. I think that's a good approach. Did you feel that it sort of worked both, obviously, person to person, there's that, but also did it help in a business sense too?
Absolutely. I think if people know that they've got that security, then they're going to want to stay longer, aren't they? If they feel insecure or they feel like their landlord is not treating them right, then they're more likely to leave and go somewhere else. So not having that change of tenancy, that's a lot of work when you've got to look for another tenant and screen them, and you'll have a gap in the tenancy in between. So it all costs you money and time. So you're better off as well in that sense.
Well, now you're looking to jump into the business world, which is, I mean, obviously with some of your previous experience, you did have some experience with businesses, but you've really focused on property until now. Now you're looking properly at the business world. So what triggered this? Tell me what's going on.
I guess property at the moment, I've always gone for cash flow property. And property at the moment is quite hard to find good cash flow property. I guess my the minimum bar of what I will buy a property for now is quite a bit higher than what I would when I was first investing. So whatever I do, I always look at cash flow. I've just sort of looked at businesses for the last couple of years and just looking at the cash flow of them, and is a business going to return more than an investment property? And this business in particular, I've looked at for well over 2 years, and I keep asking the owners, have you got plans to renovate? Have you got plans to, because it needs a jolly good renovation. And so I've been in talks with them for that long, and I'd be interested, and then I'd back away because I have a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old. So no, it's too early. I can't do that. How would I physically do that with my young children? But it's got to the time now where I think my youngest is going to turn 2 next month. And I just think, if I don't do it now, when will I do it? So yeah, I've signed up to buy this business. So it's all pretty exciting.
That is really exciting. And when you're looking at it, I mean, you're still in the middle of this process, so we can't talk in too many specifics about what the business is. But I think talking about the process and what got you interested in it is fascinating by itself. So you saw it and you thought it could do with a little investment and it could turn into something a bit more. Is that what you're looking for? Something where you think, actually, if I jump into this, I can add value and take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. I guess I do that with property anyway, right? Like I'd always buy a house with good bones, renovate it. It looks a lot better. You get better tenants. You make more money. So it's sort of the same process, but just for the business. And although I've been in business before, I've never bought a business. So there's been a lot of learning processes along the way. It's definitely taking a lot longer, a heck of a lot longer than it is to buy a property. You just buy a property, you sign a form and make an offer and away you go. But there's the lease to sort out. Do you want to buy the building as well? Or how long do you want to do the lease for? Do you want to move to a different building? There's just so many factors in it. And then you've got staffing and suppliers and a whole heap of other factors. It's not just as simple as buying a house, buying an investment, you know?
Yeah. What is it like going through that due diligence process? It must take a long time. And do you have professionals helping you?
Yeah, the commercial lawyer and the accountant are my go-to people. I have signed up with business mentors and have a business mentor, which has been great. Not so much for the figures. I mean, I guess for me, it's easy to work out the figures of whether this business can be profitable or not, because I do that with looking at investment properties. But it's really good to bounce ideas off, because when you're in this process of due diligence, you can't talk to people about what this business is. The staff don't know, right? So you can't bounce ideas off your friends like you would if you were buying an investment property. So that's been really good, just to get feedback on stuff like marketing, what they've done in their business before, to get ideas. Because obviously with my rental property business, you don't need to market it as such. It's only when you need to rent out the house again. Yeah, so there's been some key people in there, which has been great. And obviously talking with key suppliers and other people who do this sort of business in other regions or countries has been really helpful as well. To see what are the numbers like when you do give it a good revamp and that. Well, yeah, hopefully I can talk about it in a week's time. It's been so close.
I know, I've got my fingers crossed for you. I hope this will be amazing for you, because to jump into the business world, it's, you know, you're becoming an employer. You are providing things to your customers. You are really creating something that adds value to the community. I also think it's really interesting that you, trying to figure out how I can say this without saying too much of your business, but it's really interesting in an era where you see a lot of push towards digital businesses. And, you know, full disclosure, that's mine is digital first, because it was still investment to set up, but it wasn't like going out and renting a premises and employing staff. You know, I could really sort of bootstrap it. And it's often sort of pushed as, if you want to get into the business world, look at digital options. And I get it. Obviously, I'm a fan of it. But there's also some real value in these sort of real physical businesses that you can have that are more part of their community, which is more what you're going for. What drew you to that? And does it ever make you nervous in terms of, you know, things like checking out the building, getting the lease, having staff?
Yeah, it's a big risk. But I think what we talked about at the beginning is that, I guess, the more financially free you become, the more that taking those big risks don't feel so bad. I guess if I didn't have the money behind me, I certainly wouldn't be looking at this business. It would feel way too risky for me. But at the same time, I guess the commercial building doesn't scare me at all. I always thought that I would like to get into commercial buildings at some point. I do have the right to buy within the first 3 years, and then the first right of refusal after that. So my intention is to buy the building as well. And I've actually just signed up to buy a section next door to it as well.
You don't do things by halves, do you?
No. But it was a case of, like, strategically, if I don't buy it now, it might not come up again for years to come. There's a lot of people out there who have had a physical business for a long period of time and are reaching their retirement age and are wanting to sell. Like, when I look at the other businesses I was looking into, there's quite a few people in their situation. So whatever community you live in New Zealand, I'm sure there will be people that are ready to get out. Might not be now, it might be in the next 2 or 3 years, but start looking for those people because there are some really good opportunities and they're willing to help hand over to you. And it's a lot easier with bank financing too, because you can prove to the bank that, look, this is what the business has been making the last couple of years. So if you take it over effectively, surely if you keep the same staff and you keep doing the same things, you should keep making that same amount of money, right? So with a new business, I guess, like a digital business, it is a bit harder to get the financing because you can't prove what you're going to make. So there's positives to a physical business as well. I guess that the negative, I guess, with it is that once you've bought the business, you can't get out of that business. It's not going to be very easy to sell. You can't just throw your hands up and go, oh, actually, I don't really like doing this anymore. I might go and start another business. But with digital businesses, you can quite easily just, you know, like I was doing some mentoring on Instagram, and when I've been doing the due diligence on this business, I literally don't have, well, I could make time, but I want to have a nice balanced lifestyle and I don't want to do that. So I can just easily like that, snap my fingers and not do that mentoring anymore. So digital businesses are really advantageous in that way, that you can just switch on, switch off, or power up or power down as you feel you need to.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I think what you mentioned there about lifestyle probably actually is the key in terms of what do you actually want from it? What do you want it to bring to your life and your earning potential? You know, it's all of these things to weigh up. And I think different ones can work at different times. How many properties do you have now? Are you going to have to sell any of them to make this possible?
Got 10 now, and no, I don't have to sell any to make it possible, but like if I sell the lowest yielding property and then put that into buying the commercial building, it's actually a better return. So I think what I will do is I didn't want to be in a situation where I was buying the commercial building and the business straight away, because then I would feel like, oh, I'm probably better off to sell a couple of properties and then buy the, you know, at the same time. But I don't want to do that to my tenants, and B, it gives me a lot longer to, you know, I can give them a lot more and longer notice, let them move out, stage the house. It's a lot easier to sell that way. And then you've not got that pressure as well. I think the time where you get a worse price for your property is when you are in desperate need to sell. So I didn't want to put myself in that situation. So, I mean, I could just keep leasing the building forever and not buy the commercial building, or I could just take out a loan and buy the commercial building, but that's at quite a high rate. Whereas with the business and that I can secure it against residential property, which is still not that much higher than residential rates for the business, which is really helpful. So that's one positive thing I would say about if you're wanting to go into business long term, is that your property equity is really helpful in that regard to buying a business later on. Yeah, but that is the plan. I think I will sell one, possibly two, to buy that commercial building in about 2 years' time.
Yeah. Because it is interesting when you're dealing with banks on this stuff, and I understand they have obligations to make sure that people don't get into more debt than they can handle. Totally appreciate that. There are responsible lending rules. It does sometimes create issues where I've talked to many people who are self-employed who are deeply frustrated that they know they can afford whatever big plan it is, whether it's for their business or sometimes an investment property or whatever else, something that they would need a loan from the bank for making reality. And when you're self-employed, you might hit a certain level of income, but the bank often wants to see a huge track record of all of this income. And it can be hard because things change so fast in business. You can change your systems and suddenly your income has shot up. And you know that's good. You know that's going to be long-term. The bank wants to see proof. So in terms of you having these assets on hand, do you think that's made your business journey easier?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, obviously there's the good cash flow from the business, so that obviously they know, well, you're gonna be able to just take wages from your rental properties, that's how you live now, so that will stay the same. And then the business has got its proof of what it's been making, so yeah, I think that's the good thing. I also do have investment properties, and then I also have another company where I do my flips and subdivisions. So I do have two sections which are freehold that I'll sell at some point when somebody wants to buy them. Anyone who wants a section in the cargo, let me know. Reply there. But that cash can also be put towards buying the commercial building as well, or upgrades or whatever. So that's quite helpful too. Yeah.
you've got a lot on your plate. It's interesting that you've got so much on your plate, and you earlier referenced, you know, Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Work Week. I highly doubt your work week is 4 hours.
No, not right now. It used to be.
How do you balance things? Do you have people who help you, who take on some of the work? Because there's a lot going on.
Yeah, well, the rental properties don't take that much time. Like, unless you've got somebody moving out or moving in, yes. But I renovate them when I buy a property, so there's not much to do maintenance-wise. I love to keep track of my hours because I like to know how long I'm spending on things. So the rental property side of it is only half an hour a week. It's the other stuff. It's when I'm looking into doing a subdivision or a flip. That takes a lot of time. So in the last year, for example, when I was just doing managing my rental properties and doing flips and subdivisions, I'd only do two of those a year. That was about 5 hours a week. So it's not that bad. And then my kids are in daycare 2 days a week, well, effectively 10 hours a week. So that's definitely manageable. You've also got when the baby's sleeping, I do a bit then, or at nighttime sometimes. But you generally didn't need to do that. But at the moment, yes, with the business, doing all that due diligence is a lot. And there will be a lot. I think I'm up to sometimes about 8 hours a week at the moment. But because obviously I'm not doing any subdivisions or flips right now. Instead, I'm using that time to do my due diligence on the business. And obviously at the start, when I take over the business, there's going to be a lot of time getting to know the business, changing things, setting up processes. And then with the upgrades, it's going to be a lot later in the year or early next year. So, but then once that is all sort of petered down and just ticking along nicely, I mean, they run it passively at the moment anyway. So I only sort of plan to get my feet into it to sort of do the upgrades and renovate it and get it up to the speed I want it to be at. And then I'd be happy to leave it in the manager's hands again. So I think once that's all done, then I'm going to be twiddling my thumbs again going, what next? What can I do next? I'm terrible. I just don't know. I imagined when I was a kid that I would be financially free when I had children and I'd be a full-time mum and I'd be happy with that. I'm now a full-time mum and I get bored. Terrible. I just, I need something to occupy my brain, and projects, renovating or buying a business that I can renovate. It's fun, it's exciting, and it just spins my wheels.
I do. I so get what you're saying there, because I'm quite similar in terms of I'm very lucky that we are able to arrange our home life in terms of my little dude is in daycare about half the time that a lot of other people's children are. And that works really well for us. But I think being a true full-time mum for me, I would find hard, because I really love the other projects that I did. I also love spending time with my family, and especially my little guy. And so it is that balance, right, of things that specifically fill your cup and remind you of who you were before, while also still making time for, you know, there's a reason you had a family. You want that family and you want to spend time with them. It's a real balance, right? And it's not always these big projects. Yes, they often bring in money, or at least I certainly hope this business brings in money for you, but it's not always about chasing that, right? It's chasing something else. What do you feel like you're chasing now? Because obviously you hit financial freedom a while ago.
Yeah. It's the satisfaction. It's seeing something, a butterfly emerge from, you know, its cocoon, like seeing change happening and being that change, making something really positive for the community. It's also, I guess there is a little bit of that, you know, if you make more money, then you've got more money to give back to the community. That's something that I was really passionate about once I started mining. I started giving, you know, like 10% away to charity. And I really feel like the more that you give away, the more you just get more back. And that really excites me. Being able to give away money gives you this amazing passion and thrill and excitement inside you. And it's just so cool. And I just, every time that happens, I want to do more and more of it. And I have a huge passion, I guess, for kids that have grown up in poverty, wanting to help them and change things for them. And at the moment, I have young children. So I imagined that I was about to do lots of volunteering when I had children, when I retired and, you know, didn't work. But the reality is that I don't have a lot of time. But what I do have is a skill set. So I can use that skill set to buy another business, make more money, and donate that money for other people to help these kids. Yeah, I guess that's the motivation for me with this business, because a lot of people were asking me, why? Why are you buying a business? And I did have to question myself. Well, yeah, no, it's not the money. It's the passion for what I can achieve with that.
Yeah, I very strongly believe, you know, obviously there's a certain amount of money that people need in terms of eating and stability and security and, you know, all that good stuff. But after that, it's what are you trying to achieve with it? Because just chasing numbers is not going to feel fulfilling. It's not going to make you feel happy. But if there are things you see in the world that you think, I would like to be part of making that better. It is reality, right? That in the system we have now, it takes money to achieve things that you want to see changed. So when you are looking at some of the kids who grew up in situations that maybe remind you of where you came from, whether it's better or worse, and you think, I can be part of making that better for them and I can be part of that solution for them, that's huge in order to be able to create that situation where you're actually feeling like you're making a difference on things that deeply matter to you.
Absolutely, yes. And I saw that time and time again in the mining industry. You know, there's men who were seeking the money and then they'd spend it all, and someone would come back from break and have bought a boat, and then everyone else on that crew wanted to buy a boat, and they just keep seeking more and more materialistic things. I'm not a materialistic person at all. I live in a house with accents to carpet. I drive a Toyota. I love secondhand things. I just don't see any value in buying. No, actually, my husband will say, yes, you do. You love new clothes. Well, yes, that's true.
Look, we all have our weaknesses.
But I definitely place more value on experiences. I love traveling, being in new places, seeing new things. And that's, I guess, yeah, I can do that now with what I have, which is awesome. Yeah, it's more being able to, yeah, help the community, I think, is where it's at.
That's fantastic. All right, well, if people want to follow along on your journey, and hopefully by the time that this podcast comes out, hopefully you are a freshly minted business owner, which will be fantastic. But until then, where can people find you, follow along with that journey, and get that confirmation that hopefully it all went well?
Yeah. Just Instagram, financiallyfree_by33.
And if you want to get in touch with me, send through a money question for a future podcast or anything else, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as Frances Cook NZ. Also, heaps more money content on there for you. Don't forget to subscribe to Making Sense so that you never miss a trick with your money. I also have a free weekly newsletter that you can join. It's on my website, francescook.co.nz. Sign up to the money memo there for more goodness in your inbox each week. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.